Welcome to the Internet Advisor Podcast. I'm your host and producer, Foster Brown. Along with my co-host, Gary Baker, and our team of experts, we've been helping people like you since 1998 with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources, and promoting tech enterprise throughout Michigan. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour podcast recorded every week at the studios of historic WJR Radio in Detroit. Both hours of the show are available each week on this podcast and are streamed to our affiliates across the state of Michigan. We're also proud to be part of Detroit's newest and fastest-growing podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. And now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
A very good afternoon to you. Hi, this is Foster Brown, the host of the Internet Advisor, along with Gary Baker and Edward L. Cal Carson, and we're having a big birthday party here. Well, I'm sorry, we couldn't get a cake that fit quite in the studio because it's 40 years that Apple is celebrating, as of yesterday, the foundation of this very profitable company. We'll be talking about Apple computers in this first hour. In the second hour, of course, it's going to be open line answering your questions. That's the Internet Advisor from now until 6. Well, put on your parka, feed the sled dogs. It's time for the Internet Advisor on this blustery April the 2nd. Good afternoon to you. Hi, this is Foster Brown. We got the whole group here in studio, and we're all kind of hunkered down and dealing with the wind. And the man who represents spring to us just finished his program, and I thought we would definitely want to say hello to him. And that is Dr. Dean Krauskopf is here. Dean, I just wanted you to step in the studio and say hello. Hang on a second, because for some reason that microphone isn't working, so we're going to push you over there. There you go.
See, that's what happens when a person like me, plant person, gets among geeks. You know, nothing works. It's my fault. I also am getting blamed for the snow, so I'll take responsibility.
Oh,
for
that. My
you
goodness.
You got to take responsibility for one or the other, right?
I'll take it for both. Like, you know, what can I say?
And to the tune of It's Not Easy Being Green, welcome back. We're delighted to have you with us.
It's always good to be back.
It's kind of like the swallows returning to San Juan Capistrano. Dr. Dean is back on WJR.
Yeah, I've heard some other things. Things coming back, but it wasn't a swallow. But I'm not going to say what I was told. It's good to be back. It's great to be back. And I was telling you guys that my wife was going to call you for sympathy when her hard drive crashed.
Oh.
So, you know, life goes on.
Oh, yeah. But now, listen, I understand. And one of the things I wanted to do was to let our audience know that you are also available electronically. You have a website that people can visit to find out more information.
We do, of course. It's wjr.com/thegardeningshow. And yep. I post information on there. It is not up to date. It's my fault. Again, I take responsibility. Nicole does a fantastic job. I just don't get the information to her. So it's not her fault. But it will be updated by the middle of the week. Yeah, and of course, that's a way, as we do, you guys have too, to contact me. You can email me through there.
Exactly. So if people have questions about the what do I do with frostbitten plants? You've got some sympathy for them at very least.
We have sympathy, yes. We may not have a solution, but I am very sympathetic.
Well, you know, at least it's not budding out there really right now. There's not that much budding.
Well, look at my backyard.
Really?
There it is.
Well, you know, I've seen the tulips coming out of the ground.
Ed lives in northern Oakland County, which is maybe why he has...
Yeah, well, you know, there's 6 inches of snow up there right now, so it's a little bit different. No, it depends on the site. I have a very protected site, and I've got buds out, and I'm really worried about Monday night. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything you can do, I mean, just kind of quickly for our listeners as well, to protect plants at this time of year?
Most of the plants, as Ed was talking about, we don't need to worry about. If they're low on the ground or anything like that, it's not a problem. And, you know, your forsythia may get tinged a little bit. Got something that's really that like the maples and some of these, the Japanese maples especially, throw a sheet over them.
Okay.
Not clear plastic, black plastic works, but a good old sheet overnight, they'll be fine.
Excellent.
And you take it off the next morning after the sun comes up.
I got one last question. Are we in jeopardy of losing some of our fruit crops? I know that's a big deal.
Talking to Bob Tritton and some of the other people on the west side of the state, not yet. On this side, it's a little iffier. I'm a little worried because I had sprouts on my apple trees last December 26th. I was out wandering in my orchard. So I don't know. So far, we got our fingers crossed. West side's not yet.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good. Because the cherries and the apples were decimated 2 years ago.
Yeah.
We have 2 years in a row. And if you talk about, you know, family farms and things like that, 2 years in a row when you have absolutely no income. Rough to overcome.
That is terrible. Well, we can continue to pray for relief here so that we can get our crops back. Dean, it's just good to have you here. We're delighted to have you back in. And again, folks, if you want to get in contact with Dr. Dean, his address is through wjr.com/ The Gardening Show. And that'll take you there. You can leave your questions there and get in contact. And I know you're going to have a whole host of information.
It's spring. We're rolling.
All right. Thanks so much. Dr. Dean Kroskoff, who's with us for the gardening show here prior to us. And for us, it's always kind of a scene, Gary, that we're on our way. It's the beginning of our spring-summer schedule as well.
That's
He's the man who brings a rich humus to WJR.
Okay. Ooh, very good.
So, and that was Cal Carson. I'm Ed Rudell, and of course,
Gary Baker, the true
internet advisor, Gary Baker.
No, we're all advising today.
Yeah, exactly.
And he is the original.
The nice thing about today is that it's the beginning for you folks who are listening from 4 until 6, which will be our regular schedule.
That's right.
And we don't, we often, through a good deal of the year, are kind of at the mercy of whatever the sports schedule happens to be. And coming up this next fall will be really interesting when the Detroit Lions add to that. But that's mostly on Sundays that those games are being played. But in any case, you can be confident that if you tune in to the great voice of the Great Lakes, 760 AM WJR, between 4 and 6 p.m., you'll hear us, the Internet Advisor, there to help you out.
And you know, it's really great that it is a cold, snowy spring day, because where else would be better than sitting around a nice, warm radio, watching your computer and learning how to use it better, and getting around the Internet better.
So, and today we're going to be talking a lot about Apple and its 40 years, and then the second hour we're going to be taking our listeners' call-ins.
That's right. So that will be the pattern that we'll have guests on during the first hour, and the second hour we'll be having our lines open at 800-859-0957. If you want to jot that down, 800-859-0957. That's toll-free, and that will be between 5 and 6 p.m. on a regular basis. We'll be taking calls. Coming up next, we're going to be talking with a man who was the founder of the Mac Group here in the Detroit area. And, of course, we'll be talking about Apple computers. 40 years they have been around, celebrated formally on April Fool's Day, April the 1st, 1976. And we'll be talking with Terry about that and with Cal as well. Hope to, matter of fact, if you have some questions, maybe answer some of yours as well. That's all coming up on today's Internet Advisor. Welcome to the Internet Advisor, and once again, happy 40th birthday to Apple Computers. And in studio with us, of course, Cal, you've been our Apple person for a long time. You speak both languages.
I've dabbled a little bit in the dark arts here and there, that sort of thing. So it's been fun. But Apple, you know, like people would ask me, says, which one do you like the best? I go like, well, when I want to make money, I work on Windows computers because they're always broken. And if I want to be creative, I use a Apple computer because they're just fun to be creative with. With that in mind, maybe I should just go ahead and introduce our guest.
Would you please?
Well, this gentleman I've had the privilege of knowing for over 15, almost 20 years now. He is an evangelist with Adobe Systems. And in addition to that, he was the founder of the Mac Group of Detroit. way, way back when. He can tell you the exact year when he first started it. And in addition to all those other crazy things, he's a wonderful photographer. He's done some great work. If you go to terrywhite.com and look at some of the photography he's done, it's absolutely amazing. And after doing all those sort of things, he's still even a good friend. So if I can introduce Terry White to the Internet Advisor.
Thank you. Terry, thanks for being with us.
Oh, no problem. It's great to be back. And thanks, Dal. Appreciate your friendship as well.
Hey, Terry, when was it? I was going to ask both of you this. When did you get into the whole Apple process?
Well, I started with Macs on day one in 1984.
1984. So, that would have been about, I'm trying to think in terms of the history, that would have been about the time of the, I'm looking for the models.
Well, that would have been the first Mac. So the very first Mac 128 came out in 1984.
Okay, that's the Mac 128. Now, when you say the Mac 128, that was the capacity.
That's the square, the 128K.
Oh, that's right, the square
128K memory.
Exactly. I know. It's astounding to think that, and that was cutting edge at the time, I would imagine.
Yep,
now,
it was.
What made you get on board with the system?
Well, I had had before that, personally, I had a Commodore 64, if we can remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And I started doing a little bit of consulting on the side, doing spreadsheets and things like that for, actually it was my first big client was my sister's boss. He was a lawyer, but he also owned a lot of real estate properties.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing, before me, they were doing everything on paper. So no computer operation whatsoever. And I looked at some of the processes that they were doing. I said, well, I could do that on a spreadsheet. And I took it home, created a proof of concept, showed him that it could work. And he said, okay, I want a computer. And I said, well, you probably want something a little bit better than a Commodore 64. And he said, hey, this new Apple just came out with a new computer. Go check it out. And I remember, if you can remember, Hudson's at the time.
Oh, yes.
And Hudson's had a computer department.
No kidding.
Yep, at Northland, and I went to Northland one evening after work, and I kind of milled around in the computer department, walked over to a Mac, and the next thing I know, someone was tapping me on the shoulder and said, sir, we're closing. You have to leave. And literally 3 hours had gone by, and I hadn't even thought twice about it. I didn't even realize that time had passed.
No kidding.
Enthralled with the user interface, and it was the first time seeing them, you know, working with a mouse. It was the first time with graphics.
You know,
and it was all the stuff we take for granted now.
Yes.
It was my first time seeing it.
Yeah, I think it's important to stop there and let our listeners just consider that for a second, because the world of the what's called the GUI, the graphic usable user interface, it's just second nature to us now. In other words, that's those pretty things that you move around and having a mouse to work with and other stuff like that. Those are all things we take very much for granted. But at that time, Ed, if you were working with computers, you were working with DOS. Am I right?
Well, you're working with the command line
the
language.
Command line.
Yeah. And if you, we didn't have a concept of multiple fonts and clicking on something and moving it to where you wanted it to be, you know, throwing away a file. It was just, I was blown away. And actually, the first spreadsheet I think I used on the Mac, believe it or not, was Microsoft Excel. Because Microsoft, even though they were, of course, very heavily embedded or heavily pushing DOS and mm-hmm. what would have become Windows eventually, they saw a market opportunity to create a spreadsheet for the Mac and create Word for the Mac.
Wow. It sounds like in some ways, guys, and Gary, when was your first experience? Now, you've been involved with computers for a long time as well. Do you have first experience with Macs?
Well, my first experience with Mac was probably, with Apple. About 82.
Okay.
Apple II. Apple IIc, I think, came out in about 82. At least I think that was, we started our very first company,
That's
Century
right.
Systems, in 1980.
Okay.
And that was a property management program based on the very first micro, they were called micros back then, right?
Okay. So but they were monstrous.
Microcomputer, it was smaller than the mainframe.
Yes, quite.
Yeah. Didn't take a building, it took a room.
Right. And then, I had a Commodore, at that time. And then in 81, I think we got an 8086, which was the IBM PC at that time. So.
Okay. Okay. Ed, what was your first contact? Did you have a first contact?
It was the Commodore 64. I'd spent many nights playing strip poker on that thing. So,
but with yourself, it isn't as much fun.
No, it's not. I never really got that far. But you know, that was your first experience with CPM and a command language.
CPM would be.
It's a. I can't remember what it stands for. Probably our guest knows better than I do.
Jerry, what?
CPM was like the kernel for the Commodore 64.
Oh, okay. I got you.
Oh, yeah. Don't remind me.
Yeah. So but it was basically, everything was command line except for the games. And the Apple and the Commodore shared audio or intense graphic capability with an integrated sound. And the Mac took it even further by including a graphical user interface.
So was that really the magic sauce for Apple, was that ability to combine all these other things, in other words, to take it out of kind of like the math geek world and bring it into a world that just about anybody, once they learn the system, could use?
I think Steve Jobs, and Terry could probably clarify this for me better, wanted to make a machine that a person could sit down and use it as a tool, not learn how a computer works, but to be able to take the computer and use it to create things that are artistic and beautiful or useful or productive in that particular case, which is probably the reason why you got involved with it as well. Is that right, Terry?
Yeah, well, and you also have to remember some of the first apps to come out on the Mac in 1984 were programs like Mac Paint and Mac Draw and Mac Write. So things that a consumer would use.
Ah, I got you.
Out of the box. You know, you would just turn it on, put the disk in, and you were able to draw. You were able to make crude paintings with Mac Paint in black and white. Monochrome things, but that was the idea, is that you wouldn't be learning a program language. Programming languages on the Mac didn't come to much later for people that were geeks about it and want to learn other things besides the consumer aspect of it. So Cal's right. Steve Jobs and Woz as well had the idea that let's make a computer for everyone, not just people that know how to use computers.
And then I think that was kind of, for me, the magic sauce with Apple computers over the years and their other products is simplicity. I think wasn't one of the things that Jobs said is it just works. That was the idea that you could get it.
He was very adamant about things like, for example, even to this day, Macs still ship with mice with one button. Even though you can, of course, configure a two-button experience on the right side of the mouse. But the point is, if you look at the iPhone, there's one button on the front of the screen at the bottom. Everything had to be simple. If it took more than one button, he always felt like it was too complicated.
And ease of use was the big driving force behind it. You know, to be able to just take the tool and use it to be creative with was more important than trying to create something that you had to go through and whip all these sort of things up. And, oh, no, how do I do this? How do I program this? How do I program that? It's to get right to the point and be able to use that device, which is, if you look at everything, the iPhone, the iPad, the iMac, the iPod, every one of them were simple, easy-to-use products that they created.
There's something else I want to talk to you guys about. We're going to take a break in just a moment. And that is that it wasn't so much that Jobs and Wozniak, who his partner at the time, or Jobs throughout this thing, was inventing new things so much as he was reinventing. He didn't invent the cell phone. That had been around for a long time. And some of us who have been using Palm Trios saw the iPhone and said, I understand that because of what I was using. So it was almost like the ability to reinvent. We're going to continue talking about some aspects of this 40th anniversary of Apple Computers with the man who founded Mac Group Detroit. Talk a little bit about that organization and where it is now and where it's going and where you guys think Apple is headed as it takes off for its next 40 years. Thank you for joining us here on The Internet Advisor. Welcome back to The Internet Advisor. Our guest is Terry White, who is the founder of the Mac Group here in Detroit, which is, am I right, Cal? One of the biggest in the country?
Go ahead, Terry. Tell them how large it is.
I believe it is. I haven't looked at the stats lately, but we were always certainly the biggest in the Midwest and definitely probably in the top 10 or 20 throughout the history of the group in the country.
That's wild. Now, when did you form that group?
August 24th, 1986.
Now here's an amazing fact, and this is crazy because you talk about dedication to an organization and dedication to a cause or whatever you want to say, and the entire time that Terry was president, up until what, about a year ago, sir, every MAC group meeting, and I think it might have been one, but every MAC group meeting that was scheduled took place. And at every one of those meetings, Terry was at every one of those meetings. And that's for how many years?
It would have been, this is the 30th year of MAC Group, so it would have been, for me, 28, 29 years.
This includes even the birth of his daughter.
Oh, my Lord.
I think there was a MAC Group meeting on the same day.
Yeah, luckily she was born early in the morning, so I could still make it.
Went and took care of business and then came in and taught everybody something neat about
you
that.
You didn't name her Lisa, did you?
No, I didn't.
That's an inside Apple joke. Pardon me, pursue that.
But my dog's name is Lisa, and I didn't name her Lisa. She was already named Lisa by the Humane Society.
You know, there's some interesting statistics. I was not aware of that there were three people at the beginning of Apple. I thought it was just Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak and in that famous garage, which, by the way, is a private home.
Yep.
And the poor people are having to fend off the other people who were... who live there are having to fend people off who want to take pictures of the place. But what was interesting was there was a third man involved in it named Ron Wayne. Yep. And I think it was 12 days after they formed the company. Now, it was not incorporated at the time, but I mean, they formed the company, the two Steves. Ron Wayne decided it was too much of a risk for him. So they he sold his 10% share for $800 and a payout of $1,500. And he's now 81 years old. And he sold the original copy of his signed contract for $500. In 2011, that same document fetched $1.6 million.
Wow.
This has got to be a guy who looks back and says, oh my, what I missed.
Yeah, well, you know, those are what we refer to as self-inflicted wounds.
Oh,
he did that to himself.
What's interesting is that he, and the commentary I heard about this is that he was not sure that these two young whippersnappers were going to make it in the business world.
Well, you know, you, at that point in the game, you don't really know. I mean, if you had a crystal ball, you'd do something different. But...
And he had the most to lose. Apparently, he had a good deal of money behind him as a backer there. And he had the most to lose, and he's decided, that's it. I'm just, there's too much risk here for me. And he got out. And there was a lot of ups and downs.
I'm sure hindsight for everyone on this show and everyone listening is 2020.
Yeah, absolutely.
If we could go back in time and just make three tweaks, would we be now?
Just what do you think, guys? And please, Gary, chime in on this too. What was the real turning point for Apple? Because it kind of struggled along as almost like not a hobbyist kind of thing, but not certainly going to with the volume that it's gotten now. What was the turning point for it?
The turning point for Apple is easy to go back and look at it. It was the iMac. It was Steve Jobs coming back to the company, and the first big hit after he came back was the iMac, and it's been a success ever since.
See, now I would, this is Ed, and I would think the turning point, and I agree that's important, was the iPod. When I had some visiting people when I worked for EDS and they came over from Germany and they were able to copy data to their iPod and, hey, it also did music. And the damn thing, I think it held a gigabyte of songs.
And I think none of that would have ever happened if it hadn't been for the fact that when Apple was almost out of business and they were within a week or so of going out of business and Bill Gates bailed them out.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
if it hadn't been for Bill Gates from Microsoft bailing them out. And it was a good deal for both of them, right?
How was it a good deal for Gates? I've heard that said before and I don't...
Well, he got to sell a lot of product through Apple, right? Okay. And we heard it from Terry when he said, you know, used the first spreadsheet was Excel, right? So
there
was a lot of Microsoft products sold
as,
on,
as a newcomer
Apple.
To that whole Mac experience for me. It was, 2006, I think, when I came on board after having destroyed a Dell computer, which Gary and Ed will never let me forget about. My destructo pattern here.
But you do it in such creative ways, really.
It was a cup of tea. That's what it was. What was I going to say? The unique thing about the Apple computers at that particular point in time was the ease of use for me, the ease of use. And I think, Ed, you was the iPod. For me, probably it was the iPhone that came after that that kind of transformed everything for me because I wasn't into music quite as much. And I was doing fine with my Trio, my Palm Trio up to that point.
Right. And the iPhone, I think, was... a runaway, no one could deny, wonderful hit for Apple, right? And still is. It's the reason that a whole lot of people that hadn't used Apple products until then started buying Apple.
I'm wondering, you guys, you're looking ahead now, if you will, and this is kind of crystal ball gazing. Apple has done a tremendous thing with reinventing things, if you will. The iPod, Ed, you mentioned that. There were plenty of music players out before that, weren't there, at that time?
MP3 players, sure.
And they were all horrible.
They were nowhere near as good. There was a great opportunity there, and Steve Jobs capitalized on it, right? He came out with the right product at the right time to hit the mass market.
And it seemed to be that thing of simplicity again, right, guys?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yep.
Well, I remember my first USB player, and before the iPod, and it was, MP3 player. It was USB to sync, but it had all the problems that the iPod took care of. It was slow. It was incredibly slow to sync songs to it. There was no concept of playlists, so you basically listened to everything, or you skipped a lot, or you shuffled. And when the iPod came out, I remember the first thing I was in love with, was besides the speed, because it was FireWire based, was the fact that I could organize the music on my computer and then have that replicated onto the iPod. That was the number one reason I was sold. I could listen to what I wanted to listen to when I wanted to listen to it.
Where are we going, or I should say, where is Apple going now? I mean, it doesn't seem to be many categories left to reinvent, but they've certainly...
Oh, there are lots of categories to reinvent. Now that they're really, let's be honest, they dropped the name computer a long time ago for a good reason. It's no longer Apple Computer Inc. Mm-hmm. It's just Apple Inc. because they're a consumer company.
Right.
And so the iPhone is their number one product line. Computers are still great, and they still make them, and they still make a good profit from them. But they're headed towards your home, reimagining things in your home more than ever before. If you look at the Apple TV, which started out as a hobby, they're selling those like hotcakes. And this newest version now has an app store, and it now can do a lot more than the old version could because of that app store, because third parties can now write apps for it. And, of course, we've heard the rumors that, which I don't think are rumors, that Apple's heavily interested in doing a car. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the recent success of Tesla, how many years away are we from an Apple-built car?
Yeah, that will be a very interesting. Tesla just this last week,
sure,
launching his, which I think it's the Tesla 3 with $35,000 car, which is much cheaper.
People lined up sight unseen, right?
I know. They didn't even know what it would look like, and they were still lined up for it.
Yeah, there were over 100,000 orders the morning before it was announced. $1,000 deposits, over 100,000 of them before anyone knew what it looked like.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering what you guys think. We did a program called Earables, EARABLES, which is wearables, but I put it down to earables because of where a lot of these things are being used. I thought that the introduction of HealthKit in particular, and some of the things I'm looking at, there was a site called Wild Rumor, but it says Wild Rumor of Apple EarPods and with biometric sensors has roots in Apple's research. In other words, that may be an avenue. These health
appliances,
yeah.
Yep.
Not just in the home, but in the body as well.
Yeah, with corresponding apps, right? And that's the key.
Yeah, absolutely. Tim Cook is very interested in health. You could tell just by the emphasis he put on health when he was introducing the Apple Watch. And you combine HealthKit with HomeKit, and you've got all kinds of new market opportunities for Apple.
Well, folks, I'm going to be putting, there's a number of articles that I ran into the week are fascinating, talking both about the history of Apple and about projecting into the future, that I'm going to put on our homepage at internetadvisor.net. And I want to thank you, Terry, for having been with us. And Kel, I know you are one of the new guiding lights at the Mac Group now. Look ahead for me with the Mac Group Detroit and tell me what are some things coming up and what you see happening with Mac Group Detroit.
Well, the really worst part about it is that I have to follow and act like Terry White, which is very hard to do. But he left us with a base of people who are in charge, and we're going to make the group continue on with the same theme that we've done in the past, but to modify it to make it applicable to today, because user groups in the past were there because there didn't exist an internet and there weren't other places where you can go get information. User groups tend nowadays to be give you the personal touch yep. that you can have and the human interface that you can do with it. So that's the way we're going to intend to continue this that's tradition wonderful. On.
And I can vouch for the organization. I've been there for the Genius table and they have been helped greatly with my computer. Gee, Gary, I actually had problems with my Apple computer.
Wonderful.
I wonder how that ever happened. Terry White, thank you so much for all of your service to the Mac Group and for being here with us on the anniversary of Apple's 40th birthday. And thank you very much, Cal, as well. I'll take a break for just a moment and back with Mike Brennan. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown here. By the way, thank you very much to Eric Dortch, who is our engineer, and to Logan Stanifer, our producer. And by the way, don't forget, folks, that after 6 o'clock, after 5 o'clock, excuse me, we are going to be starting our open line with your questions at 800-859-0957. Just a quick question before Mike Brennan comes on. I want to ask Gary and Ed, why aren't you Mac users?
Oh, this is Ed, and I'm stubborn. Put it that way.
What do you mean? It's just you'd rather fight than switch, the old cigarette ad.
I like figuring things out. But what is there to figure out on a Mac?
Oh, right? I see.
It doesn't break.
See that whole story is gone for me. I mean, you know, people used to go on for years and years. What's better, Mac PC? Pick a platform you like, use the platform you like, and just walk on about
your
business.
I would not be an expert on a Mac. I'd be floundering, put it that way. Mm. Right? So I don't like that. I just don't like that feeling.
And you certainly are an expert on the PC.
Exactly.
Which we'll find. Gary, how about you?
There's just things that you can't do on a Mac.
Like for you, what were they?
Well, for the longest time, you couldn't do Skype, for instance, and you can now.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of software, because Mac is a closed environment, right? Mm-hmm. You have to, Apple has to approve it before you can actually sell it for the Mac. There's just a lot less software out there. So a lot of times I want to use a particular software and I won't be able to. Mm. And that was always a problem. It's a whole lot better today than it was before.
And we mentioned before, you mentioned about Bill Gates investing in Apple. The new Microsoft with Satya Nadella is really pushing a lot of its software to the Apple platform. Yep.
And there's just so much software now available on the iTunes store or the Apple store where you could find a lot of neat things right out there.
And with the advent of the internet, I think that cut down on a lot of the, it won't work on this platform, won't work on that platform. It kind of made it universal, okay? Just pass it back and forth. We use HTML, whatever the heck it is, to talk. And it made it more like quote, universal translator, if lack of a better description.
Yeah, it's certainly better today. There's certain VPN software that won't work. So if I want a VPN, a virtual private network into certain places, they only support certain... We still have problems. So in the business world, and I'm more business oriented than I am creative oriented, if I were doing a lot of video editing, I'd get a Mac. Mm.
And that's not to say you can't do business with a Mac. It's just that when it has to cross platforms,
it's a little tougher.
Both sides have a little bit of a challenge with it.
And Microsoft really has owned that world, the business world.
And it's better today than it ever was, right? Mm. And Cal is absolutely right. I go with the best technology that I can find. I don't use an Apple computer, but I use an iPhone, right? Mm-hmm. I think the iPhone is much better than the Android phone.
Gotcha.
Right? And the people disagree with me, right?
So. Use the tool that'll get the job done. Yep. If that requires me to use a PC, I'll use a PC. Sure. If I have to use a Mac, I'll use a Mac. Mm. If I have to use Linux or whatever it is, I'll do that.
And it's much less this business about, I got a Mac.
That's over and done.
I really think that is. Speaking of the business world, I want to step right in with Mr. Mike Brennan, who's with us from MI Tech News. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm the proud owner of a MacBook Pro, by the way. So I was listening to you guys.
You are a creative type anyway, though, Mike.
Well, that's it. You know, I like to think so.
you were listening to us, and so you have. How long have you been a Mac user?
Oh, God, years. For what I do, it's the best. And now we're moving into video, and it's even better. So.
Yep. And you've been doing editing, and in that world, it's been a big help for you in that world. Look, by the way, Mike Brennan with MI Tech News. MI Tech News is a great source for information on what's going on in technology and entrepreneurship in the state of Michigan. And Mike's been doing this for a long time. And what we try to do every week is to give you a little sample of some of the headlines that are out there at mitechnews.com. And Mike, one of the things I saw this week really caught my eye was the story about the pipeline leak that could possibly threaten Michigan's shore.
Well, it's not a leak yet, but it is a 63-year-old pipeline under the Straits of Mackinac run by Enbridge, and a lot of crude goes through there, 20 million gallons of light crude every day. And so the U of M did some studies. They did some, what-if projections. And the worst-case scenario is if that thing ruptures, 700 miles of shoreline on Lake Huron in Michigan would be covered in oil. So... Enbridge has not been cooperating with the state on the inspections. They're doing inspections, but they're not really sharing what they're finding out. Mm. A lot of people are very concerned about
this. Oh, yes. Well, I had no idea. Ed, you were nodding yes, because I think your folks lived up in that area.
Yeah, we definitely live up in that area. And I understand that the university actually ran 800 simulations for different weather conditions, currents, and the times of the year. And it was devastating in most of them.
20 million?
Yeah, that's a real ecologically sensitive area. It's a big tourist area.
Yeah.
And Enbridge is the one who delivered us the pipeline burst in Kalamazoo.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, come on, guys. What are we doing here, you know? So.
Well, this is the kind of news headlines that Mike follows. And let me give you one other one I saw here is DTE has a solar display that they're putting up. Was it in the city of Detroit? Am I right?
Yeah, 10 acres of vacant land near Interstate 96 and Greenfield Road, the old O'Shea Park area.
Mm-hmm.
And it was approved by the city council, so it'll take a little while to get in installed and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll provide enough power to power 450 homes. Not a big number, but hey, it's a great start, right?
Well, and that really is neat that the city of Detroit is going to create a space for that kind of thing to happen. All right, one last headline, and that is about something happening with online technologies and the health industry.
Yeah, they landed a big client in the healthcare area, one of the big healthcare providers, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this right, Advamis. And anyway, they do a lot of HIPAA stuff. And that's what Jan and the crew there pride themselves on, is providing a very secure environment for that sort of thing. Because otherwise, HIPAA, your healthcare records get out, they open, and heads roll on that one. So after a long and exhaustive study, this company selected them, and I'm sure Jan and everyone over there is very happy about that. Major client win for them.
I bet they are. Well, these kind of news headlines, you see everything from critical issues like the possibility of an oil spill to some of the new technologies going up like the DTE and their solar array. Those are all kind of things that you can find along with information about entrepreneurship and clean energy and a whole bunch of other stuff for absolutely nothing. Free. You can get that every week on Friday. You'll have all these headlines delivered. And then on Wednesdays as well, there's all sorts of video resources and audio as well. That comes to you again free. F-R-E-E. Costs you nothing. All you got to do is go to mitechnews.com, put your email address in there, and Mike will have it on its way to you twice a week on Wednesdays and on Fridays. Mike, once again, thank you so much for doing a great job of gathering this information and for offering it to our listeners as well.
Thanks, guys. And Max Rule, by the way.
All right.
Sometimes.
I know you poked the bear. Take care, Mike. All right, folks. Right now, we want to give you another number. And this number is an important one. It's the one you'll dial in order to be able to get your question answered here on the upcoming hour of the Internet Advisor. On a regular basis, every week from 5 until 6, you can call 800-859-0957. And our resident Mac expert or our resident PC experts will be happy to take your question and answer it for you. Again, the number is 800-859-0957. And whatever you do, don't wait until the end of the program. We have a stampede of people trying to get in. Get on the line early. We'll get to you just as quickly as we can after the news at the top of the hour. 800-859-0957.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. If you want to see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage or enter our forums and place your question there. You can also friend us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor Show podcast. Welcome to the Internet Advisor, hour number two. I'm Foster Brown, and excited to be with you on a regular basis now, between now and August. This hour will be your hour when you can call in and listen to our program and then participate. And the way to participate is by calling us at 800-859-0957 with your question. And our mantra here is, the only dumb question is the one you don't ask. So get on the horn. It's the Internet Advisor, hour number two, and that means your hour at 800-859-0957. And we're loaded for bear here. We've got our Mac expert, Mr. Cal Carson, in studio with us. And we've also got our PC experts, that's Ed Riddell and Gary Baker, who's the original Internet Advisor. And then I just kind of fumble along, and I provide kind of the fodder for the humor here at the station by screwing up computers.
Yeah, and when you opened up that iced tea last hour.
Did you have to say that?
Yes. Oh, that was busted. Awesome.
And it's Miller time.
It was iced tea.
Oh, dear. Iced tea, folks. Only iced tea in the background. All right, let's head out to our first caller. I think we have Wynn waiting for us in Bluefield. Hello, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How you doing? What can we do for you?
Yes, I use Windows Vista, and I've been getting messages from Google because I have Chrome.
Yes.
And they're telling me they're not going to update or support it anymore.
Yes.
After April. Plus, I have Microsoft for my virus protection.
Yes, okay.
And that's going to end April 17th as well. So what I need to know is, what should I do? I don't want to lose my emails on Gmail and everything else and my virus protection.
Okay, so I presume you're asking then, how do I upgrade to a new operating system, right?
So that's what they're recommending, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because Vista that you're on, the support for that ended, as a matter of fact, I think a while back. Does anybody remember the date on that? It was a while back.
I don't think so. I think it's still supported.
Oh, is it still going?
Oh, yeah, it's still Vista is still good to like 2019 or something like
that. I beg your pardon. It's XP that I'm thinking of.
Yeah. Actually, Vista was never good, so.
Yeah, but apparently our listener has been using it this time pretty reliably.
Yep.
I was going to switch to the 10, and I was told that it doesn't pay until they stop supporting Vista.
Yeah, so it looks like it's April 11, 2017, so you have just over a year. So you have a year to, think about getting another computer, because more than likely the hardware platform that you're on right now will not work that well with like Windows 8 or Windows 10. I think you'll like Windows 10. It's very...
Well, last year I had a virus, and it was I had upgraded the memory, so I've got like 2.5 gigs in it now.
Okay.
And so it's a lot faster, and there's nothing wrong with my computer. I'd like to keep it.
Well,
to know what I should do.
Well, one of the things you can do, try this. You can actually go to Microsoft's website and download Windows 10 for free for 30 days. And you can install it, even though you're not eligible for the free upgrade running because you're running Vista. You're eligible to install it for 30 days free and then uninstall it if you don't like how Windows 10 performs on your computer. Then you can make your decision. Microsoft provides the ability for you to download Windows 10 and then they have a USB installation creator tool that you could put it on a 4 gigabyte flash drive or even a CD if you wanted to. And
so what you're saying, I'm going to have to upgrade to 10.
Yes, probably. Well, you might be able to go to Windows 7. You know, are they still providing Windows 7? I don't think so. They're only providing Windows 7 to enterprises.
We'll go to 7, but that's probably good for another 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, but I don't think you as a consumer can go to Windows 7. I think that's only for enterprises.
Could he buy a license on eBay?
When I had my virus, he told me he could install 7 on it.
Oh, yes. There's some stores that you go to, they have the ability to do that. I'm sorry, Cal, what did you say?
Could he buy a license for Windows 7 off eBay or something like that?
Well, it sounds like an OEM or maybe a small mom-and-pop shop can install it for him.
I'd be a little concerned about what you're getting when you do that.
What happens to my Gmail?
Well, Gmail is all web-based.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. It's all stored on the Google Gmail cloud.
And I'm using Microsoft for my virus protection.
And the same would be true if you ran Windows 7.
And just for your information, Wynn, what happens is when you move up to Windows 10, for instance, it's built into it. It's called Windows Defender now. And uh-huh. It's not an external program. It's built right into the software.
Yeah,
I have that with Vista because it's automatically in there.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, Defender was in Vista, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's also included in Windows 10 and Windows 8, you know, for the most part, and Windows 7. But a lot of times when you purchased it from a big box store, or Dell or whoever, what they do is they're paid to actually install someone else's software on there, and they uninstall Microsoft's and install AVG or McAfee or Norton Antivirus. They're actually paid.
Mine came with Windows.
I understand that. Right. And what I was saying is that antivirus from Microsoft was provided since Vista with every version of Windows. It's only that when you know, some manufacturers actually remove it and they're paid by someone else to put a different antivirus on there.
What we might suggest is, as Ed has said, is that you can go and download a trial version of Windows 10 and put it on your computer to see if you like it. All right.
What about going to Mozilla or Foxfire or something like that?
Well, no, those are browsers. That's a completely different thing, okay?
Well, that's what Google is telling me. Chrome is telling me to do it. I need a new browser.
So so you can actually download Google Chrome for Vista. Yeah. And you can access...
I used to have Microsoft Internet, and when I got the virus, he told me never to use Internet. Mm-hmm. You said always use Chrome.
Okay. Correct.
As a browser. And then what we're also telling you, yes, you can download Firefox, for instance, as another alternative. And we suggest for people that what they do is to have two browsers at one time. So, yes, you can download that right now, regardless of where you're going to be going after this. You can get a good, clean copy of that. Okay, Wynn? Thanks so much for calling. And by the way, for Wynn and for anybody else, if you've got more questions, you can simply go to internetadvisor.net after the show is over, and you can send us an email through our contact button there, or at the very bottom of the form there's a comment box, and you can enter your question or comment in there, and it'll get to us just as directly. And during the week we work hard on getting those things answered. The number is 800-859-0957. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. Thank you so much for joining us, Eric Dorsch. Thank you, our engineer, and Logan Stanifer is the pleasant voice that answers the phone. Thank you for being here with us at 800-859-0957. Let's head back out to Janet in White Lake. Janet, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you today?
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about upgrading to Microsoft Windows 10 from 8.1.
Yes.
I tried that a few months ago, and then I got locked out. It said user profile service failed. The sign in. Hmm. User profile cannot be loaded. So I was able to get into recovery and get back to 8.1.
Good. Excellent. Yeah. Good.
After I talked to somebody from Microsoft.
Okay.
Now, my question is, how can I test the integrity of my user account in case I want to get back into 10 again? Well, I don't want the same problem.
Well, and I think you do want to get to 10 as soon as you can reasonably do that. So what can we recommend for her?
Well, the first question is, what type of user account do you have on Windows 8? My son had a problem in which the first time he set up a user account on there, he did not tie it to his Microsoft account. So is your user account, when you log into Windows 8, based on your Microsoft Windows user account?
I have a Microsoft Outlook.
Yep.
Is that it?
I believe it is, yes. So
I did have that, and I tried that, and it still wouldn't let me get in.
Well, yeah, but every time you log onto your computer, it challenges you for a username and password. Is the username that's on the screen the same as your email address for Microsoft?
No, it isn't.
Okay, that might be part of the problem, and I've heard of issues with this. And the other possibility is there's been a number of computers out there that have problems because of video drivers. And because your computer actually fails to install a video driver for some reason, it not only affects the installation, but your account becomes corrupted.
Oh.
Which sounds like one of the problems you've been experiencing. So how long has it been since you've tried the update?
Well, it was, I think it was in October.
So it was quite a while ago. So that was when it was first rolled out.
Yes.
You know, what I would recommend is, and when you performed the update, you let Microsoft probably push that to you. And I let Microsoft do that as well. But then on subsequent times, on my other home computers, I went to Microsoft's Windows 10 website and I actually downloaded the entire Microsoft Creation Tool. And when I downloaded, it was only a couple meg. And when I ran, a couple gig, I should say. No, let me take that. A couple meg, I was right the first time. And when I downloaded it, it says, what version of Windows do you have right now? And I went in my Windows 8 and looked. And it stepped me through the process. And it allowed me to download a version of Windows 10, and then it created a USB flash drive for me. So I had to have a 4 gigabyte flash drive. But basically, it allowed me to, which are only $5 if you go to the right store.
Okay,
the drugstores now.
Well, a 4 gigabyte or a 8 gigabyte. They're so cheap now. Yeah. The minimum size you need, I think, is 4 gigabyte.
Right.
And you can get those at Staples for under $10.
Right.
Micro Center, so, you know, they use them as, you know, they throw them at you as you leave the store. Here, take your free 4, you know, I'm just kidding. And what I did is I created a 4 gigabyte, and then I booted my computer up with that flash drive on my wife's computer and my son's computer. The installations went so much smoother on their computers than mine.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll try then.
Yeah. Okay.
Try that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, take a crack at that and let us know how it goes for you, okay?
And if you have difficulty finding that, you can go to the Internet Advisor's website, and in the comments section, you can send us an email, and I'll send you the link to that, because I know I have at least 5 emails from other listeners where I sent them Microsoft's detailed instructions on how to create that tool.
Okay.
Okay. It seems to be a problem from what I'm hearing.
Yes.
There have been problems. But the nice thing about that is what Ed's experienced here is a solution, and that's the best part of it. Janet, thanks so much for giving us a call. All right. Good luck to you as you do that. And let's say hello to Jill, who is calling us from Macomb. Jill, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Since you're talking about Macs and PCs today, this is a perfect time for my question.
Okay.
I've been a Mac user for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually longer, but my current Mac is 5 years old, and I'm starting to have vision issues with the font size and stuff, especially across, like, the Safari homepage and everything.
Okay.
I'm considering going to Windows, Microsoft Windows, and back to the other computer, because I think that can be adjusted more for people that have vision problems. Comments?
Yeah, that's good. Thank you for stopping there, because, Cal, let's talk about that first issue with the Apple computer.
Is it possible that you haven't fully utilized a feature on the Mac, and you would go into System Preferences and then go to Accessibility? And in that area, they have things like Zoom, so you can get a larger image zoomed in on the screen. You can take advantage of those types of things.
I have done that, and then it distorts everything else on the page.
Understood. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that you're using a Mac laptop or a desktop?
The desktop.
Do you and which Mac is it?
It's an iMac, and it's probably 5 years old.
Okay.
It has Intel. It's a 17-inch screen.
Maybe what you need more than anything else is a larger screen.
Right.
That way you get to see more real estate at the higher resolution. Yeah. And even if you do blow it up to a larger font size, it won't pixelate as bad.
I thought about that. So for me to get a larger screen, basically I'm buying a new Mac computer, correct?
With an iMac, you're right.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. You'd be going to a new Mac, and you can get some really good deals on a 24 or 27-inch iMac a couple of different ways. If you're still in college, of course, you can get an education discount on it. The other thing that I have done in the past is on Mac's website, you can buy them refurbished. So it's a Mac that was either returned because someone didn't want it or whatever, that sort of thing, or there was something wrong with the box or something like that. They reduced the price on it, but yet they still warranty it just like it's a brand new machine. So you can buy with confidence.
Good.
I've thought about that.
Cal, can you, I'm curious about this, with an iMac, can you gang it up or team it up with another external monitor?
If she had a newer iMac that had a video out on it, then she could plug in a dongle that would take it from DVI to VGA, and then she could hook an external monitor to it and be able to look at it. But her five-year-old Mac that she has, I'm not sure it has that capability on it.
And that's one of the nice things about newer computers and laptops in general, is that most of them come with the HDMI output. And you can go to Best Buy or you can take the old one out of your living room, which is, oh, it's only 32 inches and I'm never going to want to watch TV on that. And you can have a 32-inch monitor.
Yes.
What you can do.
Apple Play.
Go to the Internet Advisor website, go down to the Contact Us page on the bottom, and send me an email of the serial number of your Mac.
Sure.
And you can get that information by going to the Apple about this Mac, and it'll tell you the serial number.
I know where to get that.
Good. I can look that up and then look at the specs on it and tell you whether or not you can put an external monitor on it.
Okay, Jill.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Cal. I know you want me to stay with the Apple.
Yeah. And the other thing that we were going to mention is, and I think you were alluding to this, if you had AirPlay capability, that you could actually replicate your monitor from your laptop to your TV with the wireless keyboard, and you would be able to then use your 32-inch or 50-inch TV as if it was your Mac, right?
But she would have to have an Apple TV as an interface for it.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's only $99. Only.
Yes. Cal has three of them. And he hasn't even unboxed them yet.
You're welcome, Jill. Take care of yourself, dear. All right. We'll be back in just a minute. And we'll be talking with Andy, Dan, and Bob. And perhaps you as well at 800-859-0957. Thank you very much. We are now in the groove here on the show. that is every Saturday from now until August, mid or late August. We are going to be following Dr. Dean, that's Dr. Dean Krauskopf, with the WJR Gardening Program from 3 to 4. And then from 4 until 6, we'll be here on a regular basis. And this hour is your hour. And that is the 5 to 6 o'clock hour. We got the phone lines open and we got people calling in. And that's the way it ought to be.
That's
Thank
right.
Thank you very much. All right, let's head back out to the... Oh, one of the things I found kind of interesting is this is the 40th birthday of Apple. Is one of the reasons that Steve Jobs chose the name Apple was so that it would be ahead of his former employer, Atari, in the phone book. Oh, and the original logo, and I think I put this on our Facebook page, was a rather complicated one that was done by Ron Wayne, who was the third partner in the Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak, and Ron Wayne, initially the three people who began the company.
Are we speaking of the logo with Isaac Newton underneath the
tree? Yes, with Isaac Newton under the tree. It was a whole... And what happened was that Steve Jobs, and it's kind of interesting because it really talks about how the company went after that. Jobs thought it was too complex, and so they opted for a rainbow-colored apple with a bite. And that simplicity is kind of interesting, which began in the logo there, really was what defined the way they looked at everything from then on.
I wish I could be able to ask him the question, why did he put the bite in it? Because that's the one that threw me off. I have no idea why that bite's in there.
Isn't it?
Well, I think it may have something more to do with the Beatles. And
oh, that's right.
Because they had the Apple
their
Productions,
Apple
and their logo was just an apple, a green apple.
But it was a green apple, yeah. But if you got a rainbow apple,
as opposed
apple,
to a rainbow
there's,
apple.
There's no copyright infringement.
Well, now we're talking Skittles. So don't.
Taste the rainbow.
All right, enough, you two. Let's get back up and say hello to Timothy from... Hello, Timothy. How are you doing? And welcome to the program.
Hey, I'm doing real well. Thank you very much. I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
I love you guys. Listen, I've got a early 2008 MacBook Pro, which I use single purpose in my business. I use it to make recordings of my voice with some background music. That's all I ever do with it.
Oh, okay, cool.
And yet I'm running across these occasions when the computer will freeze and show me a message that says that the disk is too slow.
Yeah, it could be very possible that over time, a couple of things could be happening. Over time, the disk itself has errors in it that start to mount up over time, and it could be the fact that it's when it's trying to read it, it has to go back multiple times to read it, and so therefore it's not responding as fast as the program would like to process the sound. So you could have you could be in need of either a replacement hard drive. The first thing I would probably do first, though, before that, is probably go into utilities and run disk utility and see what sort of errors may or may not come up from that. And then if you're getting a lot of errors on that particular thing and have to do a lot of repair, you may want to consider replacing the hard drive. And chances are you have a 5400 speed hard drive in it. You may want to put a 7200 speed hard drive in there in its place.
Now, what type of hard drive would that be? Would that be a SATA or an IDE?
It'll be a SATA drive.
SATA drive,
oh, that's good. So those are cheap. And I'll probably be considering an upgrade at this point.
And I, Timothy, I put in a solid state drive, an SSD.
You could do a 250 gig solid state drive for about $120.
Oh, I think it might be. Even now, I've seen them for less than that.
Yeah,
they're getting
really?
Ridiculously. Oh, they're getting ridiculous. And the change in performance will be incredible. What software are you using to do your recording and editing?
GarageBand. The only reason I'm using the Mac, full disclosure, I'm a PC guy. I've been a PC guy my entire life since the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it less intuitive to use the Mac than I do the PC just because of I'm old. But
he's honest.
I've always
been
told that Mac is the way to go when you're doing recordings.
Yes.
And so because I want to have a good quality recording, I just went with the Mac instead and used the GarageBand, which comes with it.
So he'll have to back up at some point. I mean, I'd actually encourage him to back it up. Or at least so he has the ability to reinstall the operating system on the other, right? So
he needs to have it backed up regardless of whether he's having problems or not.
Right, exactly.
But
I've taken all the recordings off and I've stored them on my PC, which has got a huge, I've got a 1 terabyte hard drive on my PC at home. So I just took all the recordings off and I saved them there. So there's nothing on the system that is essential with the exception of just the GarageBand, which I could put on the new hard drive pretty easy.
Yeah, if I was you, I would consider running a utility, having to check out the drive, see if it's okay, and then at the very worst, pull the drive and then reload it with a new drive in it. And you could even put the other drive, as Ed does so many times, into an enclosure.
Yeah.
You know, buy a small USB enclosure, put that hard drive in it, and then that way you can copy your information back whenever you need to.
And Tim,
go ahead. That's not a DIY situation. That's nothing that I could do being that it's a laptop, is it?
Well, it depends on which laptop you have. Some of them, you actually can flip it over, take the battery out.
Mm-hmm.
If your battery is removable, then behind that battery is a little three screws that you can then remove and then pull the hard drive out.
Yep.
But if your battery is not removable, then you'll have to have someone professional.
The battery is removable. I was just going to upgrade the RAM from 4 to 8 megs.
Good. That's another good addition.
I was told that might help.
Tim, one of the things that we have found too is that YouTube is a great place. Ed is a big fan of this. Turned me onto it as well. YouTube is a great place to go to find the videos about how to do things.
Yeah, I just have a really hard time.
True? Yeah,
I have a hard time with the 12-year-olds telling me how to remove screws out of a laptop. It's just so hard. Their voice is cracking. It's just stutter and stammer.
And you want to suggest Clearasil all the time.
Yeah. But back up your data before you.
A person could do that themselves because I was concerned about the labor getting to be so much that it'd be cheaper another used Mac or something like that.
As long as you have the right tools. You take some time and be careful of all the electrical considerations and make sure you have the data backed up before you start.
Yep.
You should be able to do it.
Yep. Yep. And the YouTube will explain most of that.
I did it. I have a 2011 MacBook Pro and did it on that myself. And I've done both the increase in RAM. If I can do it, anybody can do it, right?
Okay.
I did have some screws.
Well, I'll look for that. A digital hard drive. That sounds like a way to go.
Great way. Solid-state hard drive is a great way to go. Tim, thanks so much for giving us a call. If you have any other questions or problems, please go to that comment section at the bottom of our program, notes@internetadvisor.net, and we'll get back to you as quick as we can. Dan from Dearborn, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an Android smartphone that I've had for a couple years now.
Okay.
And beginning around December, at least once a day, I get a call from out of state.
Hmm. Which one? The cruise or the credit card problem?
No. Originally, it was about 10 calls a day.
Oh, wow.
And from states that I have no dealings with, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first started getting these, I reported them to the, I think it's a combined effort of the FCC and the Federal Trade Commission,
mm-hmm.
on do not call list violations.
Yep.
I never heard anything back from them. But I would not take these calls. I just reject them. But once in a while, it would pique my interest, and I would, you know, try to take it. But there would be nobody on the other end of the line. Right now, I get about one a day.
That's because those are robocalls, and the machines are designed to sit there and wait till it hears someone say, hello, and it's like, welcome, you just won a cruise, that sort of thing.
No. I stay on for a while, and nobody ever says anything.
But are you actually talking into it?
Yes, I'll say,
oh, really?
Yes. Hello, yeah.
Oh, that's different.
That's different. Now, you know, you were just talking about a workmate of ours, Dave, right? And basically, he has a utility that he downloaded from the Android or Google's Android store, which basically is Safe Caller. And there's a number of these utilities out there that are free, which are the, I'm only going to take calls from these people or this area code. And there are a number of utilities that do that. And although I don't recall the name of the utility that our coworker was using.
Right.
Do you recall, Kel?
No, he didn't tell me.
Yeah. So we always tease him because he's always does stuff like that. This time, actually, it burned him because he missed a very important phone call, and we're gonna chastise him about it Monday morning. But there are utilities that actually do that. But you've done the right thing, and that is to contact the if you're on the do not call list, especially for mobile phones, which in some cases people are charged for every phone call they receive if they answer it. A lot of people still pay for minutes, and that's why you have this do not call list.
Well, yeah, that's what really frightened me at first, because I thought, geez, at a rate of 10 a day coming in, when I'm paying, originally I was paying by the minute. I use Virgin Mobile.
Yes.
And that you know, my quota is going to disappear well before I take a legitimate phone call.
And you've done what I do, and I just say, I don't answer, and it goes right to voicemail. If they don't leave a voicemail, I know it was junk.
Yeah.
But they do have utilities in the Android store. Unfortunately, I do not know. I can't recommend any right now. I don't use one personally. But they're based on safe callers, like family mm-hmm. and friends, mm-hmm. you know, and then also area code.
I have to say this, Dan. I have my wife in particular has been getting these things on a regular basis. Now, she has a Windows phone, so I don't think it's the nature of the phone itself, but that they somehow they're breaking through do not call lists.
Well, I received them. I just signed up for a new credit card. And of course, if you have to, within 48 hours of signing up for the credit card, have to basically go on, log into the website and disclaim that I do not want that information to be turned over to the partners.
Oh.
I did that, but some of the information, it says, regardless if you fill out this information, it's going to, we're going to turn some of the information over. So,
Dan, thanks for the call. You've raised a very important issue. I hope we've helped some folks out with the answer as well. Thanks so much for calling us. Hey, Bob and Andy, we'll be back with you in just a moment and maybe even sneak in your call at 800-859-0957. Welcome back. The Internet Advisor on the air for you. And just to remind you that on a regular basis, we're going to be here from 4 until 6 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturdays, part of the great lineup of experts here. And we're delighted to be following Dr. Dean Krauskopf. Thank you very much, Dr. Dean, for coming back. And even though we had snow out there, for officially heralding spring.
It is so good to be regular.
It is.
You know, when people
the older
can,
I get,
when people
the
can,
more mature that is.
When people can turn their radio on and know they're going to see us there,
there
that's regular.
And even though it's a radio, they'll see us there. All right. Let's go to Steve, apparently, from Detroit, has some information on the Apple logo. Hi, Steve.
How you doing?
Good. Thank you.
So I read this. It was in a book called Dreamers and Deceivers. And it was about the little snippets, but Alan Turing was one of the guys that mentioned, And after he saved England,
yes,
and possibly the world,
absolutely,
he was a homosexual, and he was persecuted, yeah, by the same country that he saved.
Yep.
And supposedly he was infatuated with the story of Snow White. And I think that's the one, Snow White. And he bit an apple that was poisoned. He killed himself.
I knew he took his own life, yes.
And that was where, this is how the book said it, that where Steve Jobs got the bitten apple.
I'll be now, if you've seen the movie,
whether that's true or not,
yeah,
I thought it was a great story.
Well, Steve, what you're talking about is, if you've seen the movie The Imitation Game, that is about Turing's life and breaking the code, the Nazi code, and the fact that he was a homosexual, and that in Great Britain that was a crime at that time, and they put him through some horrible things, and he eventually did
that in North Carolina too. Now, so
yeah, he eventually took his life. He eventually took his life, and I didn't know how he did that, but it just says he took his life.
And that's like Aristotle, who said, "I drank what?"
Oh dear.
Exactly. So I read this, and it sounds like a great story, whether it's true, but.
It's a great story.
Makes kind of sense, I guess.
Whether it's true or not, it's a great story, Steve. Thanks a lot for it. Okay, let's go back out to Bob from West Bloomfield. Hi, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure. What can we do for you?
I just ordered a brand new laptop because my other one died.
Okay.
And I guess it's not repairable. Anyhow, before I start using it, it's going to arrive on Tuesday.
Uh-huh.
It's a Windows 10 laptop. And should I do a complete backup on it before I ever use it?
Well, I mean, one of the things you could do is it allows you to, you know, back it up.
Create the rescue disk.
Yeah, you can just create the rescue disk that usually it does when you first power it up.
Yeah, it's in the control panel. I have another one.
Yeah, under backup, yeah, or history.
Yeah, backup and restore, and then it says in parentheses Windows 7.
On the current computer that you have?
No, I just bought another, what do you call it, a small Palm, or a tablet.
Oh, okay.
And on the tablet, that's a Windows 10 also. And I, you know, it has Cortina, and I asked Cortina about backup, and it took me right to the control panel.
Uh-huh.
And in the control panel, one of the icons says backup and restore.
Yeah.
And then in parentheses, it says Windows 7.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, here's the bottom line on this thing. I have never, ever, 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 times 10, forever, had a backup hurt me. So it won't hurt if you do a backup when you initially get the machine. The biggest reason why we do backup is to be able to recover from something we may lose. Now, when you get the initial machine, a lot of times they have what they call a recovery partition in them.
Right.
So that's already on there that you can't harm unless your hard drive itself dies.
Mm-hmm.
So, and technically speaking, you don't really have to back up the machine as soon as you get it because you haven't created anything on it that you want to keep anyway. And there's nothing on there that you can't recover from in the first place. But you should start doing a backup almost immediately after you start creating stuff or downloading things that you want to keep in the computer.
You know, Kel brings up a good point. I usually don't do the manufacturer's backup or do my first Windows 7 or 10 image of it until about a week after I get the computer because I've already done the customizations. I've uninstalled all the stuff
that came off.
I've arranged the desktop. I've created the user accounts. I usually wait a week and then I make that, okay, this is the gold image. And then I put it to an external drive and then I label it as such.
Could be on a thumb drive. Could be on a DVD.
Yep.
And
it depends if I have my data on there or not.
Yeah, that's right.
But you bring up a good question.
Yep.
And that's what I would do. I would wait a week. You know,
I would agree.
Because
would agree.
You're still under the manufacturer's warranty, and you can always send it back
within
that first week.
The other thing you could do, too, is that you can just go in and subscribe to a cloud backup service like Gary would do and just, you know, have that starting as soon as you, right after you set up your computer, and there your backups are being done automatically.
Yeah, and that's for the data. It doesn't back up, you know, the system.
Well,
rest of the system.
I think CrashPlan does.
CrashPlan that I use, they back up the entire hard drive.
Yeah.
So you can just.
Now, you don't have to because you already have that image to restore with.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, you don't really need to
do that. What you used to call belts and suspenders, I think, Gary.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yeah, it helps.
Okay, Bob.
I appreciate the help. If I email you, do you guys answer back on an email?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay, I have another question on my other laptop that died.
We would love to be able to help you. And during the week, Ed and Cal and Shane and Gary and myself, we all pitch in as well, okay?
All right, very good. Thanks for your help.
Thank you very much for giving us a call. Let's see if we can get one in for Andy out there. Andy, welcome to the Internet Advisor. We got just a little bit of time for you.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. You probably have gone over this issue. I think I got the tail end of it last week, but I didn't hear what your answer was. I keep getting these pesky Windows pop up. I got Windows 7. Mm-hmm. You want me to go to Windows 10, and I don't want to go to Windows 10. I'm afraid I'm going to fat finger it one of these days. and then I'll be, you know, whenever I do that, I'm always in trouble. So I want to prevent that from happening. Is there any way that I can suppress that?
Suppress it? Yes. And I forgot the knowledge base article, but you can go in and you basically uninstall a Microsoft update, a KB. Right. And I don't recall the number, but I'm sure if you Googled it or went to YouTube and said, how do I...
defer.
How do I get rid of the Windows 10 upgrade notification?
The NAG.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Someone will provide a video on that.
Now, the other thing I think last week we ran into was to go into Control Panel and under Updates say that I don't want any automatic updates. I want the manual.
Which will work, but you won't get any other updates either.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
If you need security updates, you're not going to get them.
Yeah, you have to remove the specific Microsoft update that they pushed last August. Of 2015, and then it'll stop the notifications.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much, guys.
Yeah, great question. Thank you very much. Sorry we didn't have more time to go into that, and we'll talk with Donna off the phone here. But for the rest of you out there, if during the week you want to get in touch with us, you simply go to internetadvisor.net, and you can hit the contact button or go to the comment box, which is at the bottom of our webpage, and I'll be filling in all the rest of the show notes from the program and things like that, including some information about the 40th birthday party for Apple. Gary and Ed and Cal, thank you so much. And Eric and Logan, thank you for helping us behind the glass. And for the rest of you out there, thank you so much for making a great weekend for us here. Join us next week.
You've been listening to the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally produced computer show, with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and our team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit InternetAdvisor.net. Don't forget to check the other great podcasts available on this PodcastDetroit.com network. Thank you for listening.